And welcome to another episode of the Riddles in the Dark Digest. We are, after a little bit of a lengthy break, we tend to sort of record these in spurts whenever we can manage to find the time to do it. We're back to for another marathon afternoon of recording, followed by hopefully David will sit down and have a not too long marathon episode of editing to get all of these ready, plus the Riddles in the Dark episode from this week that's still lying around, yada yada yada. But we'll be caught up.
That's right.
Yes, within a week from now we will be caught up and on our new pace of releasing a new episode and then releasing a backdated digest every other week.
You're such an optimist, Dave.
Yeah, what can I say?
Are you thinking that if you say it out loud, it will become so?
Yes, yes. Words have power in Tolkien. In contrast with Game of Thrones, where people are constantly saying words are wind, which seems maybe a little bit more closer to reality. So, anyway, I am co-host Dave Kale, and with me is my faithful co-host Trish Lambert, who you've already heard. Trish, how are you today?
I can't shut up until after you introduce me, God forbid.
Neither can Corey, so this is just like I still haven't nailed down how to do a good – I listen to all these other podcasts, and I listen to how they do their intros, and I'm like, oh, man, I got to come up with like an awesome intro, but it's just
– You do good.
Thanks.
Plus, you've got that great music to start with. So.
That's true. Thank you to John DiBartolo and the Lonely Mountain Band. It is awesome music. I love it.
Yeah,
so – So as we were explaining, we're going to sit down and do another couple hours of recording and try to knock out two digest episodes. We're going to try to cover the remaining topics apart from the most recent one. So that means episodes 8, 11, 12, and then the infamous 13 where we posed a question and then had it answered by Peter Jackson 2 days later on Facebook. And also apparently people thought we were snarky and all kinds of whatever on it. So we got a lot of recording and a lot of topics, a lot of questions to discuss, feedback to share. We have contributions from our analysts again, Mark. We have a surprise for this episode. We have a recording from The Last Alliance, which is kind of fun. We have some conundrums to go over. We also have a lot of like Riddles in the Dark news. Lots of exciting things in the works, right, Trish?
Right. Yeah.
We have some new volunteers from our call on a previous digest episode. And actually, I want to thank all the people who wrote in and volunteered. And we're happy to continue having people volunteer. I'm going to be honest. We got this inundation of people. And we're like, whoa, we don't know what to even do with all these people yet.
See how powerful you are, Dave. It took you just one time of saying it, and we got this, you know, tsunami of people. And thanks to everybody, like Dave said.
Yes. Yeah. We really appreciate your willingness. We're now what we're trying to do is figure out what to do with all of you. I think as time goes on, there will be more opportunities to contribute. Like immediately right now, I think a lot of you are going to have to sort of basically say like, thank you. We're going to put your name down on the list. We're not quite sure where to fit you in yet because it is adding a whole bunch of new people, you know, saves us a certain amount of work, but creates new kinds of work. And so,
I know there are going to be people listening to this saying, well, Dave, I mean, why'd you even ask?
Yes. Well, no, because I'm glad to know people are, interested. I think the one thing one clarification I do want to add is that people with particular skills or willingness to do particular things are probably going to be in the highest demand right now. So, for example, we have one gentleman who's working on building us a new interactive grid that we're going to deploy hopefully soon. His name's Ben. He's been fantastic. So people with programming skills like that or user interaction design, web dev type skills like that are you know, we will definitely find uses for you. And then people who are willing and experienced with audio editing. Like if I could offload some of the editing burden onto in production, you know, podcast production onto folks, that would be helpful. But we had a number of people who wrote and said, I'd love to volunteer, but I'm not editing podcasts. Like, oh, dang.
That's the biggest thing probably right now.
Yes. Yeah. That's the biggest pain point. So, for those of you who wrote in and said, I'm willing to do, you know, whatever and stuff, we're happy to have you, and we will definitely more than likely there will, as time goes on, there will probably be a place for you. But in the short term, we're just sifting through all the emails that we got and trying to figure out, you know, what's the best way to do things so that we don't just introduce chaos to the process. So,
right. And I do want folks to know that we are keeping you in mind.
Yes.
You know, we have regular conversations. Basically, it's Corey and Nick who is, gosh, everything to Mythgard, but he basically is the, you know, web guru and webmaster. And then Dave and I, and, you know, we kind of toss around ideas and stuff. But, you know, I mean, as a marketer, I totally understand. Corey is rightfully, you know, really wants to be really careful about not only getting too many people involved, say maybe in writing, but also to make sure, you know, I mean, it's essentially the Mythgard Institute, and we want to make sure that we don't get too diluted, that we don't, you know, get or go off message or any of that kind of stuff. So I mean, all of that kind of takes time, because we come up with these great ideas, but then we kind of have to sift through them and say, well, you know, maybe not this one. And so, but we've got you guys in mind. It's
yep.
just, it takes us a while to kind of come up with what's the right next thing to
yes.
do.
Yep. That's right. So please, if you haven't written in to volunteer yet and you want to, please do go ahead. Don't be discouraged. Please do.
Especially
so.
If you want to edit podcasts.
Yes. Yeah, especially if you want to edit podcasts. We will respond. It may take us a few days to write back, but we will respond, and we are very, very grateful. And then we're compiling like a little, you know, database of people who've expressed their interest, and we're writing down sort of what sets of skills people say they have or interests or how they want to contribute, new ideas. That's one of the big things that I'm asking when people volunteer is like, are there things that you would like to see, like new kinds of content or whatever. So we're happy to get all of that. It's just, it may take us a little bit of time to get everything together. So please be patient with us. As we said, we're going to have a new prediction grid up soon. We're also adding some new analysts. I haven't finalized it yet, but I'm hoping that Emil from the Lord of the Rings project will be joining us as well. He said he was interested and wanted to do it, so we're going to try to make that happen, try to get him on board soon.
Right.
And maybe some other – we have some other people in mind we haven't approached yet. So lots of exciting things happening. I guess we should get on to the actual episode, huh?
Yeah, that's probably not a bad idea.
So the temptation here would be to launch immediately into talking about the really exciting news and all that stuff, Split and all that, you know, the three films. But we'll save that for next episode. Right now, we want to focus on Gollum. So this digest, we're going to cover the riddles from episodes 11 and 12, the how will Gollum and the Hobbit compare to his portrayal in The Lord of the Rings, and then, of course, how will the riddle game go down. So let's start with the first one. And this one, actually, we probably will go over this one relatively quickly, because we feel that it's kind of been answered fairly definitively by
by Gollum himself.
That's right, by Andy Serkis at Comic-Con, where he kind of said that we will essentially be seeing the same Gollum from the Lord of the Rings films in The Hobbit, you know, the kind of schizophrenic Sméagol Gollum, you know, flipping back and forth, talking to himself in a mirror type Gollum. But to refresh everyone's memory, the question, the riddle was, how will Gollum in The Hobbit film compared to his portrayal in the Lord of the Rings films? So we're not talking the books, but we're talking how will the Gollum in the upcoming films compare to his portrayal in the previous films. So A was, he'll be portrayed as more sympathetic, perhaps by showing flashbacks or revealing more of his internal psychology. B is, he will be portrayed pretty much the same. C is, he will be portrayed as less sympathetic and actually more wicked and threatening. And then D is, none of the above. So that's our catch-all. We have no clue. Couldn't come up with a good answer. If folks recall, when we did this episode, Corey treated us to sort of a nice overview of how the Gollum character was kind of evolved from earlier editions of The Hobbit to later editions of The Hobbit to The Lord of the Rings. And in particular, the early edition Gollum was actually a lot more kind of a lot less wicked and less evil and a little more kind of sympathetic. And, you know, he was a stickler for the rules, and he didn't intend to, you know, he intended to, if he won the riddle game, maybe harm Bilbo, but he didn't intend to betray him the way he does in the later editions of The Hobbit. And that he actually, you know, when Bilbo wins, he sends Bilbo off, shows him the way out, waves goodbye, good luck, and that kind of stuff. And right. So the Hobbit, the later edition Hobbit Gollum that we get is actually much, much more wicked than that guy is. And then the evolution sort of, you know, becomes even more nuanced into the Lord of the Rings, where we get a much more sort of complicated picture of his psychology and his history, and we get Gandalf explaining filling in his background, and we get Frodo and Sam kind of experiencing very different sides of him. So that's where we really get the very complicated version of him in the Lord of the Rings books. And then, of course, Peter Jackson and Andy Serkis have a very particular take on that character in the films. So there's a really kind of there was a big open question about how they would handle him here in these films, because it seems like there'll be a lot of pressure to portray him as he was in the Lord of the Rings films. I mean, like with many elements of the Hobbit films, they're going to be torn between the expectations of the film-going audience that maybe isn't as familiar with the books, and the expectations of the Tolkien purists, such as ourselves, who are going to want to see it pretty much the way it was in the book. So, let's see. The other thing I want to toss out is we also had a conundrum question where we essentially asked the question, and if folks remember, conundrum questions are sort of a supplementary question series that we've added to that, where usually we will be introducing these in the digest episodes, but in this case we introduced it in the actual episode. And it was a yes-no question that we asked: will Gollum leave the mountain before the end of the first film?
Actually, I think we included it in an earlier digest.
Yes. Corey and I recorded it and talked about it at the end of a Riddles episode. Yeah. And then we included the recording in a previous digest as a bonus. So anyway.
And then you and I decided that we wanted to have questions to ask of our own, didn't
that's,
we?
So, that's exactly right.
And so the conundrum was born.
Exactly. So I want to start by reading Mark Fisher's contribution, and then we have one other contribution that we'll play from The Last Alliance, and then we'll get into then we'll talk over Trish's take on this and maybe review what Andy Serkis said and stuff. Okay. So Mark Fisher says, there's definitely a dilemma here. There will be a lot of audience expectations surrounding Gollum, and I can't really see his couple of scenes in the book fulfilling that. That's especially true as I imagine they'll somehow have to trim the riddle game to make it work cinematically, so they won't really have much time to develop Gollum's character at all. There's one obvious trick they could use to get around this, and that's by bringing forward later parts of his story and adding a few scenes showing him leaving the mountains and setting out in pursuit of Bilbo. That would give them enough space to give him a miniature character arc, from the murderous creature we meet at first through to a more pitiable and recognizable version by the end of the journey, when he inevitably fails. It would also tie the films together, potentially even explaining how he ended up in the clutches of Sauron, as we see in quick scene in The Fellowship of the Ring. I can't think of a single shred of evidence that they're going to try anything like this, but I like the idea, so I'm going to call it my prediction anyway. In terms of Gollum's character, then, I reckon we're going to start with a thoroughly disreputable sea version during the underground scenes, then progress to something more sympathetic and conflicted at some point across the two films. I don't suppose I can really have C then B as an answer, so, carefully avoiding the Mark Fisher answer, I'll pick my first other this time. It's a D.
Poor Mark.
Yeah, I know. He's really funny. So, and of course, he he's also answering the "Will Gollum leave his cave in the Misty Mountains by the end of the first film?" He says, "Well, that's pretty much my entire thesis for my answer to Riddle 12, so I'd better say yes." And just to review, we also had another conundrum question that we introduced a while back. Will there be a talking person in the troll scene? And Mark gives a very reluctant yes. He says, "There'll presumably be something strange and unforeseeable rather than Bilbo just breaking a twig or something like that. That would totally undermine his first attempt at burglary. It might very well not be a talking purse, but I can't think of a better alternative, so I'll give a very reluctant yes." So that's just a funny little thing.
You know, since we've done that question, it's dawned on me that the merchandising benefits to having a talking purse are huge.
Yes.
So yes. That, for that reason, there very well might be a talking
purse.
There
might well. That would be the main justification. That would be the one way that they could convince people to let them have a talking purse.
Right, right.
And for what it's worth, Mark is the only person apart from Golden Star who said yes. Everybody else has said no for the talking purse question. But Golden Star and Mark are the lone holdouts hoping to see a talking purse.
I got to tell you, this is a little bit of a side thing, but talking about the merchandising, I was knocking around the Weta site the other day, and they've got all these collectibles, you know, that they sell. And then they also have a section on their site for the collectibles that have already been sold out. In other words, that they're not making any more of. I was blown away by not only what they're making, but what people are paying for these collectibles. I mean, I invite anybody to go over and look at the Weta Workshop site. You're not going to believe the stuff that they're selling, plus what they're getting for it. You know, like miniatures, $399, $500 for like a scene of Isengard or something. You know what I mean? It's just like, wow, golly. So this is big. This is big bucks. I mean, this is business.
I completely agree. I completely agree. And, you know, a talking purse character, that could be a really fun little... Certainly Weta could make like a $10,000 statue of it.
Oh my God.
And
oh my God.
People, I mean, out there would buy it.
Merchandising would be, I mean, they'd have the gold version of it. And then for the really rich people, and then the like plastic version of it for people like me.
That's right. So, on Mark's answer, you know, the one thing about this is, of course, this is one of those questions that I think, so when they announced the trilogy and the expansion of the films into three instead of two. We had a number of people who messaged us on Twitter and said, "Well, that just blows your whole Riddles of the Dark game out of the water, doesn't it?" And we were like, no. They're still, you know, I mean, it doesn't really ruin it. And I do generally believe that. We've been very careful to select questions that we think have bearing on the first film. And I don't think it really changes a lot of these questions like this, like how will Gollum be portrayed? It has nothing to do with how many films they're making.
That's true.
That said, I do think this conundrum question is complicated by it, because there's a part of me that thinks that it's entirely possible now that Gollum might, you know, because we worded it specifically, will Gollum leave his cave in the Misty Mountains by the end of the first film?
Right.
And I felt strongly the answer would be yes before. Now I'm feeling. Now I feel like the reason I felt like that is I before felt like there wouldn't really be time to reintroduce Gollum as a character and show him leaving the cave and all that in the second film. Now I'm thinking, with an extra film, they have plenty of time to do that. So it's complicated.
Right.
I'm gonna stand by my yes, but
yeah,
I just wanted
to
throw that out there.
I'm going to stand by my yes as well, but I feel the same way. I mean, now it could be actually in the second film. I mean, I can see it. It's more believable that it could be in the second film now.
Yes. Yeah, totally agree. Totally agree. Okay, so let's next up, we're going to play the contribution that was sent to us from The Last Alliance, the University of Alberta Tolkien Society. So I think people really enjoyed. We enjoyed the recording, and we hope they keep doing that and keep sending us recordings. I know
I agree.
I don't know how often they meet, and I'm not sure if this was a full meeting of the group or if this was a subgroup. I think this might have been just a subgroup, because I know their Tolkien Society is pretty large. But I think folks will really enjoy it, and they read a little bit of a passage from The Riddles in the Dark, which I hope doesn't get any of us in trouble, because we're going to include it. And but it's a fun little recording. So,
hello everyone, this is The Last Alliance, the University of Alberta Tolkien Society, and we will be discussing The Riddles in the Dark, question 10.
11.
11, rather, how will Gollum in The Hobbit compare to his portrayal in The Lord of the Rings? I just want to mention, as an aside, what the club is doing concurrently while we have this discussion is hand-painting mugs for our club to use at book studies. We have Smaug designs, we have the JRR symbol designs, and it's pretty much fantastic. So just keep that in mind as you're listening to our discussion. Okay, I'm going to read the choices for everyone. Option A, he will be portrayed as more sympathetic, perhaps by showing flashbacks or emphasizing his kinder Smeagol side. B, he'll be pretty much the same. C, he will seem less sympathetic and more wicked and threatening, consistent with his long possession of the ring. D, none of the above. All right, open the floor for discussion on this point.
It's going to be C.
More wicked.
Yeah.
We actually do have a member who is absent who proposed a couple arguments for C, one of which being there's no dragon, supposedly, until the second film, so we need a villainous presence in this film. So Gollum could serve that purpose. And Gollum has had no hiatus from the ring. As in The Lord of the Rings, he's been away from the ring for a number of decades. But in The Hobbit, he's had it continuously for hundreds of years, so its hold on him is naturally stronger.
I also think having a vicious Smeagol will help emphasize Bilbo's fear in the caves, in the mines, in the tunnels.
He's a very vicious creature. I mean, he's throttling orcs from behind and eating mm-hmm. them.
Threatening to eat Bilbo.
This is very...
And his riddles are really kind of scary, if you think about it. Like,
they are dark. Yeah.
And he actually gets tired of the riddle game rather quickly, and then he thinks, I want to finish this, I want to eat him now.
I think he only goes into the riddle game in the first place just to be cautious.
Just because,
because he's not sure what's going on.
Because he doesn't know. Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think what we should... something to remember is one of the most important parts of The Hobbit is that Bilbo takes pity on Gollum, and I think if you're going to portray that on screen, Gollum has to seem pitiable in some way.
That's a really good point, actually. So it might
that might
be...
That would lean towards A.
But again, anybody in Gollum's place would be pitiable just because of the place that they're in. Like, Gollum isn't pitiable because he's Gollum, but Gollum's pitiable because of the situation he's in. So anybody else in that situation, whether they were pitiable or completely evil, would still need sympathy because of that?
Well, I can't really remember how it's originally treated in The Hobbit. If it's more of Gollum's character, or if it's something that's sort of Bilbo's own... Does it say more about Gollum or Bilbo that Bilbo takes pity on Gollum?
Yeah.
Does anyone...
Do they have a copy of that chapter you can take a look at?
I have a copy.
Oh, very good.
Let me find it.
Oh, Rick.
Oh yeah, here it is.
Are you going to read it or enlighten us?
Yes, I will. Yes, thank you. Yeah, I'll read it. Bilbo almost stopped breathing and went stiff himself. He was desperate. He must get away out of this terrible darkness while he had any strength left. He must fight. He must stab the foul thing, put its eyes out, kill it. It meant to kill him. No, not a fair fight. He was invisible now. Gollum had no sword. Gollum had not actually threatened to kill him, or tried to yet. And he was miserable, alone, lost. A sudden understanding, a pity mixed with horror, welled up in Bilbo's heart. A glimpse of endless, unmarked days without light or hope of betterment. Hard stone, cold fish sneaking and whispering. All these thoughts passed in a flash of a second. He trembled. And then quite suddenly in another flash, as if lifted by a new strength and resolve, he leaped.
So to me that says a lot more about Bilbo's character and where Bilbo is as a character.
Yeah, but how do you get across on screen how Bilbo is feeling about that without maybe Gollum seeming pathetic or seeming like sympathetic as he does in Lord of the Rings films?
Well, one of the things that comes clear to me, having heard that again, is that the moment of compassion is when Bilbo is trying to escape later. This is not during the actual conversation or the riddles match.
Right.
Or even afterwards when he hears Gollum wailing.
That's a really good point.
This is when he's trying to escape. So...
Yeah, so...
Another thing they could do is if they do the frame narrative, they could have Martin Freeman voicing over as he's telling the story. He could actually even read that passage from The Hobbit verbatim, and I would really like to see that because it does say a lot about Bilbo's character. And so we could be seeing Martin Freeman's facial expressions during this moment as he's reading those lines about, you know, suddenly a compassion surged within me.
And what I like about it is Bilbo's pity is aroused when Bilbo is able to feel what Gollum is feeling, because, you know, he talks about miserable, alone, and lost, which Bilbo himself is at this moment. So it's true compassion, a suffering with, and entering into Gollum's suffering. And even how it turns, right? He starts fight, stab, kill, put its eyes out, and then there's this turn, you know, it's not a fair fight, he was invisible now, Gollum had no sword, right? It's interesting, you wonder if you can make a case again for the Took Baggins thing going on here. That the Took is the kill, stab, but then the Baggins is kind of coming back and with the compassion. I don't know.
Right.
One thing for shooting this, another possibility might be that you can have a moment when you show Bilbo's hands on the sword and scabbard, maybe about to take it out, or maybe he's got it halfway out, and then you can see his face, and maybe you have the voiceover, the narration, maybe not, and then when he relents, he puts it away again.
Yeah, I think
I really love the idea of the frame narrative, like you said.
I think very attractive.
That would be great. But yeah, so
I've got mixed feelings, but that's just me.
Yeah.
So should we vote? See a consensus? The pity being more on the part of Bilbo than
Gollum's
evoked
evil.
By Gollum's character.
Gollum seeming
sympathetic
fierce.
Character.
Yeah.
And Gollum himself doesn't have any sympathetic qualities to speak of in the Hobbit, as far as I can tell.
What is he going to be? Isn't the question he's going to be more wicked than in The Lord of the Rings?
In The Lord of the Rings, he is sympathetic.
Quite sympathetic, generally.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of fair to say that it would be more vicious than everyone.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so the Last Alliance goes with option C. Thank you very much for listening, and may your beards grow ever longer.
Trish and I actually didn't listen to it in real time there. We listened to it beforehand, and then
I loved it. I thought it was hilarious.
And I edited in later, but, they're very personable. I think this is one of those questions where I wonder if, in light of, Andy Serkis's interviews at Comic-Con, if some people might go back and would want to change their answers. There's a lot of kind of hindsight is 2020 going on here when we get these little tidbits before the films even come out. Trish, let's run over all of the predictions that we got, and then can't remember. Did we get a prediction from you?
No, not yet. You get me at the end. I mean, I'll just talk a little bit about. I'll give you a summary of what the comments on the site were like, because that'll also then feed into my.
Yeah. So we haven't gotten yours yet, and you get to benefit from the hindsight.
Well, I'm going to stick with what I originally.
Everybody but Trish has answered, and it looks like what we have is we actually have one case of A. Hannah Harlow from Houghton Mifflin Harcourt said A. She thinks that he will be more. What was A again? He will be more sympathetic. Yes, I thought so. Father Roderick and Corey and myself all said B, that we essentially thought he would basically be identical to what he was in the film. Merrick Goldenstar, Lily and Elorio in The Last Alliance all said C, that he would be a little more wicked. And Mark Fisher and Arwen both said D. We know what Mark thought. Mark picked D because he thought it would be a combination of C and B in an evolution. I'm not sure what Arwen was sort of thinking there. Maybe she's thinking the same sort of thing. You know, I think this is interesting because I think Mark's sort of layout, particularly in light of the fact that we know that there's going to be an extra film, and so there's a potential for more screen time for this character. The idea of a character arc for him is very interesting.
Yeah, I really like that, actually. It would be great if that actually does make sense. To me, Mark's idea, I think, fulfills both the character of Gollum from the book, but it also then, you know, matches up with the Gollum we see in Lord of the Rings. So, I mean, to me, that's the best solution.
whether we, I don't think we're going to see that, but I think it's the best solution.
So, yeah, so I think, boy, this is complicated. I'm really happy I chose B, because I still think B is the most
and
likely.
How prescient was Father Roderick? Wow.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, brilliant.
He answered that after he came back from vacation.
That's right.
And after Comic-Con. So
yes. In fairness, I still think there's room for Mark's answer, and I think
especially now.
Yeah. Well, I think that. I'm just going to go ahead and state my conviction here that if we see something like what Mark describes, where there's an evolution of the character, where earlier in the films he's more the flat wicked character that we saw in the later editions of The Hobbit, and then we see him evolve more toward the more complicated schizophrenic Sméagol, then you could interpret that as, well, that was just B. That's, you know, we saw sort of the same thing in the Lord of the Rings films, but I will advocate for Mark Fisher, you know, I will advocate for us interpreting that as a D and giving, awarding Mark the right answer. But, I think there's room for that, but I suspect ultimately it sounds from what Andy Serkis has said, like it's going to be more in the
B all the way.
Yeah. It's going to be more in the, well, you know, I don't know. I think this is going to be one of those questions. We're going to have to convene a committee to decide. Yeah. You know, after we.
Well, I remember him saying, I think it was a Comic-Con interview that I saw where he was talking about, he basically, the gist was, something like, we wanted the audience to see the same character they saw in Lord of the Rings or something like that. In other words, the you know, that they'll be comforted by the fact that Gollum is going to be the same same character they saw. So it doesn't even sound like necessarily going to be a character arc. Although I will say this one thing, and I'll probably say this again other times, you know, they're pretty smart about how they're sharing information. And you know darn good and well they're still going to include surprises for those of us who are even following as closely as we are. So, you know, that leaves a glimmer of hope that maybe there would be actually be a character arc like Mark is talking about.
Yeah, and thinking about Mark's answer again, we have to remind ourselves occasionally. It's always a temptation to think of The Hobbit as a one long continuous story, and we have to remind ourselves the rules of the game here are. First film, how will he be portrayed in the first film?
Right, that's right, that's right, that's right.
And so, so Mark's answer could well be right when you look at his character arc over all three films.
Right.
But it's possible that the only on-screen time we'll get from Gollum in the first film, the film that comes out this December, will be the Riddles in the Dark scene. And maybe he'll be wicked there, and then maybe by the third film we'll see the more...
It didn't sound like it, because Serkis talked about the fact that they, you know, filmed the thing for 13 minutes. It's a 13-minute scene. It was the very first scene that Martin did, and they, you know, every time they filmed it from the beginning to the end, you know, the whole time. So, I mean, it seemed to me like Serkis's comments about the character of Gollum was in the context
of that scene.
13 minutes. Yeah. Yeah.
So. Yeah. I might give Mark Fisher a chance to revise his answer, because I like reading through his answer. It looks like he was thinking of it in the context of over the course of three films. But I think that will be a fun thing to speculate about after the first film comes out, after we see how he's actually portrayed on screen. I think it'll be fun to think about what role is he going to play in the later films and how will he be portrayed.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay, cool. Is there any user feedback we really want to go over?
Well, from the Mythgard site, there was quite a bit of feedback, and I do want to say, by the way, that I really appreciate a lot. We've been getting really a lot of comments on all of the episodes in the digest, and just keep it coming, guys, because it's just so much fun to have you guys participate. I didn't really, you know, note a lot of stuff. There was actually quite a bit, but by and large, the group came down with on the side of C. I mean, I would say. There might have been one person or maybe two out of the whole group that was different, but everybody came down with C. And mainly the main reason that most people gave was because that's the truest to the book. You know, he was – oh, and the fact that, you know, he had been under the mountains for so many hundreds of years.
Right.
He was still under the thrall of the ring. You know, it hadn't been taken from him yet. He was fat and happy, you know, eating his fish and eating goblins. And so he had plenty of time to be thoroughly wicked.
you know, and that's what people were using as the reason. And I totally get that. So that's what they came down with. And I actually did also say C, and I feel honor bound to stick to it because I was typing furiously into the NetMoot chat thing to Corey during this episode, you know, with all of my reasons why he would be C. And he said a few of them, but he kind of ignored most of them. But one of the reasons that I said C was because I felt that the movie needed a really black character. I likened it to Darth Vader, you know. And again, sorry, perfect timing, wasn't it? I like it at Darth Vader. People love a really black villain, you know, and I was, again, kind of going at it from sort of the marketing, merchandising, movie, commercialism side of it, which is, you know, I thought the Gollum being really, really, really bad would actually be a more popular character than the one that they saw that we saw in Lord of the Rings, you know, and they'd sell more figurines that way. Mm-hmm. So that was where I was coming from. Not, I wasn't even necessarily doing the true to the book thing, but since, you know, since the announcement, I see logic from that standpoint as well in what they are doing, which is connecting this character without question to the original trilogy by not wavering on his character. And like you and Corey have both said, truthfully, doing it this way gives him more depth than having him be all wicked. You know, Corey said it's a flatter, you know, the book character is actually a flatter character, really. And so I can kind of see the logic. But anyway, I said C along with most of the commenters, and I'll stick with it just because I feel honor bound to do so.
Good for you. I'm proud of you.
So I already know I'm wrong.
And I always take what the actors say with a grain of salt, as I've said before, and several people noted on Twitter.
I'm gonna make a T-shirt for you that says that.
Because you know he can say like, oh, you know, we're portraying it pretty much the same, but it could be that when we go back and see how it was written and see how the portrayal looks on screen once it's been edited and all that, it could be that the ultimate effect is that maybe we'll all agree, oh, that was much closer to the book than the previous film.
True.
So
that's so true. I mean, maybe he could be saying that to basically set the audience up for that expectation, and that way it won't be as jarring if they do go with more wickedness.
That's true.
Yeah, you're right.
Yep.
You know, there's a couple things about
that. I'm actually just saying that to be nice to you and the all of the commenters who are all going to get it wrong.
You're so kind.
Yes.
You know,
you're all going
to
get it wrong.
I don't know if this is the right place to say this or not, but I'm going to do it anyway. I think Jackson is being incredibly cagey about how he releases stuff to us. And where this has come up for me most recently is in thinking about that whole Took versus Baggins thing that we did with Bilbo.
Yes.
And that you guys, as well as the rest of us, have come up, you know, have you been using that line from the trailer where he says, I'm a Baggins of Bag End, you know, saying that it looks like maybe he's going to be, you know, portrayed more as a Baggins. The thing about that is we don't know what line comes after. You know, Bilbo could say that, and the very next line could be Gandalf saying, yes, but you're also a Took, and you have that in your nature. You know what I mean? It's like, mm-hmm. Jackson is not going to show his whole hand to us. You know, he's going to leave some surprises, even for those of us who are, like, reading every single word and looking at every single frame. So I think he's being very cagey in what he leaves out, and I think it's going to be really interesting once we see this film to see, you know, what he did to us beforehand.
Yep. Yep. I completely agree.
Anyway, I didn't know where the good spot to do that was, so that's my
spot. I think that's entirely reasonable. I still think you guys are all going to be wrong, but...
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I do actually get the idea of having the Sméagol-Gollum combination in terms of when you talk about, like, sort of continuity of character. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I mean, I do get that. I'm sort of disappointed because I was really kind of hoping I'd see the really bad Gollum. But this part I won't pick about. There's other parts of the movie that I might have a problem with how he does it. But this one I can get. So there, those of you who said we're snarky.
Yeah. We'll address that more later.
We'll do that in the next episode.
So let's move on to the next riddle, which is how will the riddle game be executed? Because this one's really interesting, and I think they've settled this yet. I think we have some information. You know, it's 13 minutes long and all that, but that's still doesn't answer this fundamental question.
And this, again, is another example of what I just said, which is it's 13 minutes long, but he never said it was 13 continuous minutes.
Right, exactly.
Movie, and
also, we don't know if they won't maybe film some additional or if they maybe film – well, okay, we probably know they didn't film any extra content for this, but we don't know what was included in those 13 minutes.
Right. Plus, the 13 minutes isn't probably – it's not all Riddle Game necessarily. It's they meet each other. They have to have the fight at the end. You know what I mean? It's like – so what part of that 13 minutes actually is the Riddle Game? So there's still, I think, some questions.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, Riddle Game. How are they going to handle the riddles? Remember that our four choices were they will not omit a single riddle a la Bilbo's recount during the council, i.e. the Mark Fisher book answer. which, in my opinion, seems highly unlikely at this point, given that the film's 13 minutes long. They could cram – if they do, like, rapid-fire riddle game, like a game show version, maybe they could do it, since you're losing out on all of the internal monologue. But, you know, reading that chapter alone takes, like, an hour or so.
That's true.
Seems unlikely.
But I have a question, though. We've talked about there being 9 riddles, right?
Yes.
But that's actually – so that's only 4 rounds of riddle plus Bilbo's last question.
Correct.
So, I mean, if they were going to cut down – I mean, I just thought of this today. It's like, well, gosh, if they cut too far back – I mean, I don't think 2 rounds of riddles – well, maybe it could.
Well,
but I just seems 2 rounds of riddles just seems too short.
That's been my concern as well, that if you cut out riddles, then what you might get is sort of – I don't know. Like it'll be really kind of dumb if you just like each of them asks a riddle and then Bilbo asks what's in his pocket. It's like
right. Well, actually, one of our analysts actually makes this point as well.
Yeah, that was a really fun game.
Yeah, right.
And it doesn't give you the notion of time passing. So I'm really interested to see how they do this. That's why
this
I was
going to be.
My mind was at one point drawn to. Well, okay, let me enumerate the answers. A, they will not omit a single riddle. It will be recounted exactly the way Bilbo is said to have recounted it during the Council of Elrond.
Right.
B, they'll omit some riddles, but those that they keep or that they maintain will be straight from the book, so they won't alter the riddles. They'll cut, but they won't alter. C, reinvented. That means that they will alter some of the riddles or they'll add new ones entirely. So maybe they'll cut some riddles. Maybe there'll still be a short scene, but they will also be altering the riddles versus B, where they will be doing them word – whatever riddles they include will be word for word. D will be completely stripped down. If we get any complete riddles at all, it'll maybe be the first one and then Bilbo's question at the end. But mostly what we'll be getting is a montage of fragments of riddles, kind of similar to the way it's done in the animated Hobbit film. Basically they kind of tee it up with a riddle or two and then they just do a montage, or they have like the disembodied voice singing the riddles in the background or something weird like that. So, those are your four answers. If you recall, Corey chose, C. So he thinks that he really believes that Peter and Fran and Philippa are going to sit down and rewrite the riddles, and that they're going to want to change some of them, update them, make them more modern maybe. They just won't be able to resist trying to kind of reinvent the scene. My take was B. I think they're just going to cut, but I think that they'll leave the riddles alone. Mm-hmm. So,
what do our analysts have to say? What does Mark Fisher have to say? Does
yes.
Mark Fisher give the book answer?
No, not this time around. The poor guy. He says, I've been wondering about how they'll manage this part of the book for a while. It's a key scene, but it's also not remotely filmic, which he's right about.
Yeah.
I don't have a clue what they'll do, but my best guess is that they'll split the scene into 2 fairly substantial chunks. That'll give them time in each part to build the tension, but they can cut away to whatever the dwarves are up to in the middle. And then they can break up an otherwise very long sequence. That also allows them to drop a few of the more anachronistic riddles, which can be assumed to take place while we're watching the dwarves. As for the riddles themselves, I can see the temptation to reinvent them, but I don't think there'd be that much gained from doing that, and there's quite a risk of disapproval over changing such an iconic element of the story. I'm guessing that they'll use the more accessible riddles, perhaps with minor rewording here and there, skip past the more unconventional ones, while leaving open the possibility that they were asked while we were away in the scene. I think that puts me in the B camp. I can't see them including every single riddle, but I also don't see them making drastic changes. So that is basically almost a word for word kind of what I thought, that essentially what they would do is they would cut down the number of riddles so that they minimize the amount of screen time of this scene, both because it could be long and it could also be very slow. And some of the riddles are just like, just perplexing and hard to understand to a modern audience. But that in order to give us the experience of time passing, they would cut away to other scenes, maybe the dwarves, and that they would come back and make it clear that this scene has advanced. Right. So I completely agree with Mark. I think it's a fantastic and brilliant assessment. Must be if he agrees with me. And just to toss these in, he also gave us included his answers for two more of our conundrums. He said, we asked, will the party make it to Lake Town before the end of the film? He says, based on my answer to Riddle 6, I should really say no here, but the more hints we see coming out, the more this looks likely, or the more likely this looks. So I'm going to go for a completely self-contradictory yes. That's a good job, Mark. Play for the win, man. Play for the win. Right. And then question four was, will we see Legolas shield surfing in the first film? Good grief, I certainly hope not. Knowing Legolas, he might get up to something spectacular, but I can't imagine we'll see a repeat of something we've already seen. Definitely a no here. So,
I should have asked, will we see Toriel shield surfing?
Yeah. Well, in my opinion, at this point, given what we know about the three films, I'm guessing we won't see any shield surfing in the first film because it will all be in the second film. Dang it. That's so there's right. One we're definitely getting wrong.
Darn, because I said yes on that, I think.
Yeah, uh-huh, uh-huh. So this time around, we have a contribution from Casual Stroll to Mordor, our first in a while. Thank you, guys. Thank you to American Golden Star.
Riddles in the Dark. Yes, another one where we bore you with our incomprehensible of Tolkien's
Mickey
work.
Mickey Mouse voices. Uh-huh.
Well, we're going to sound ridiculous anyway, so we might as well make funny voices.
Okay.
Pretend we're... I've been listening to too much talking tunes.
You're not as good as Rob Paulson.
No, I'm not. I'm awful. It's why I don't do
Rob Paulson is from Michigan. I'm proud of that.
A lot of voice actors from Michigan.
I was really proud when I found out he's, like, from my area.
All right. So, how will the riddle game involving Bilbo and Gollum be handled? And this is an interesting tone because this is a very pinnacle point in the movie and in the story, especially because Lord of the Rings, because Lord of the Rings came out. So there's a lot of people who have seen the movie, haven't read the books, but they know that this is a pinnacle point.
Sure.
So
this is the riddles in the dark.
There is a lot of room for, and there's probably some pressure because it's Andy Serkis. It's, reprising his role, and this is, everybody knows Gollum. So how will this riddle game be handled? Will it be complete? Will they not omit a single riddle, much like the account told by Bilbo during the Council of Elrond? Will it be partial? They'll omit some riddles, but those that they keep will be straight from the book. C, reinvented. They'll alter some of the riddles or add new ones entirely. D, stripped down. They'll show only a montage of fragments of riddles.
Not D. They better not do D.
They better not do C either. I would get so mad if they did C.
Oh, yeah. If they alter the riddles or make new ones, no. I'm guessing it's probably going to be B. Because I've recently read The Hobbit to Baby Hobbit, and it's a lot of riddles that they go through.
Okay, well, listening to it, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of riddles. But there's a number. I think there's enough to where you would bore the audience.
Yeah, I think that they'll probably pick some of their favorites and keep most of them in, I think. And they'll be straight from the book. They'll be the actual riddles. But I don't think they'll go through the entire thing.
Yeah, I think it's going to be B. It's going to be partial. I expect, like, the death one will be in there. Oh, I can't remember. Gollum had a lot of dark ones, so his one will be good. But I'm sure the death one will be there. I think I would like to see the egg one. The egg one.
Well,
was
all the
good.
Bilbo ones were kind of food related.
Yeah, the Bilbo they were. The sun one was good because it took Gollum a long time. But I don't know if that's something you can convey without overtones. I mean, you can't really say, yeah, being like, I don't remember the sun, so I can't. Oh, it's the sun. I can't. Yeah, right? So
yeah, how are you gonna do his inner conflict there?
Yeah, it's just like, what's in my pocket obviously has to be.
Oh,
there.
Duh! If it doesn't end in that, they did it wrong.
Yeah, I think that'll definitely be there. But yeah, I'm guessing it's gonna be partial. I'm guessing we'll see we'll probably see like three or four or five
back and forth. So, yeah,
something like that. Enough to make it seem a little bit
like it was
long.
A game, like it was something that was actually happening and not just like I asked two questions and then I won.
Yeah, I mean, the reason, I think one of the reasons that Tolkien, other than he loved words and obviously that he made so many, is because it doesn't make sense for Bilbo to run out of riddles like too into it and be like, crap, I've only learned one riddle.
He did the pocket one because he ran out of riddles.
I only learned one riddle
in my
entire life.
Yeah, that's true, because he did the what's in my pocket, which isn't technically a riddle, only because he didn't have anything else to tell him.
A says that 3 is the standard for number for performances. See, yeah, there's got to be rules.
So there you have it. There's their take. It's good to hear from them again. I think we haven't heard from them in at least a couple of digests. But there seems to be very little controversy there. They both agree on B. And in fact, looking at all of our analysts, everybody chose B except for Corey, Hannah, and Lily and Eloriel. And I'm going to be honest with you. I don't understand what Lily and Eloriel put. Because they picked E, and I don't know what that means, because I don't
and
see
it. And they didn't explain
E
it, right?
Yes, I'm going to have to follow up with them and ask what the heck they mean by that. They're pulling a Father Roderick.
That's right.
Yeah, understand. I don't know what they're doing there. I guess they just didn't like our answers or something. So, we have 6 B's, 1 A, 1 C, and 1 very mysterious E.
Yeah.
I think it's time to unveil your answer, Trish. What do you think?
Or do you want to go through? Yeah, let's talk about what the commenters said.
Okay, let's hear
first.
What the commenters said then.
So Michael basically brought up he was the first commenter, so I want to give him kudos for that, since he brought this up way before, you know, any of us talked about it. But he brought up the fact that Andy Serkis had mentioned in a scene that they shot it in 13 minutes. The fact that we have to have a couple minutes of them meeting and deciding on the rules of the game, and then with Bilbo following him out, you know, the riddle portion's not going to be very long, really. And so, you know, we've already talked about that. Kate Neville, my fellow Mythgard student, she she's actually in theater. So her answer is detailed, you know, doesn't surprise me. She said, here's a guess. Bilbo wakes up after being dropped by Dory, discovers that his sword glimmers, and notices ring by the light of his sword. Pockets the ring, wanders down the tunnel, meets Gollum, and the riddle game is agreed upon. And the first riddle is asked. Cut to Gandalf and dwarves fighting their way out of the back door, escaping down the mountain, and Gandalf saying, where's Bilbo? Cut back to Bilbo and Gollum in the middle of the game with Bilbo saying something like, oh, I thought that Daisy one would stump you. Then we get a few more riddles, including the fish one, ending with what's in my pocket and the escape of Bilbo. So she's basically put more detail to what Mark talked about, you know, which is 2 chunks with a cutaway to the dwarves in the middle. But Michael Lucero says, I don't see them cutting back and forth between the 2 scenes. He thinks that because, you know, as you guys discussed, it would take away from the dramatic tension of the moment. However, if they do, Kate, then that's a real genius way to work in the reference to the Daisy riddle without actually having them have to do it on screen. So, San Diego Dave says his answer is B. He agrees with Riddles in the Dark, Dave, that the riddles in the book are short enough that they don't really need to be altered. As for the more difficult riddles, because of language and their composition and whatnot, those are the likely ones to get cut. That said, he thinks that they will definitely cut to Gandalf and the dwarves once or twice for 2 reasons. 1, it will help keep the riddle scene from getting too long and boring. 2, on film,
it simply doesn't work to leave all 13 characters off screen for 15 minutes or more with no idea where they are, what they're doing, and then suddenly we see them outside the mountain saying, oh yeah, we escaped, that was very exciting, you should have seen it. Harry, yeah, so I agree, you know, I mean, I do think that it makes sense. Doesn't the Great Goblin get killed during this their escape?
Yeah, I think so. Gandalf kills him.
Yeah, right.
And that's, and in fact, that's why the goblins are so upset.
Right.
And that's why they're so, once the dwarves and Gandalf and Bilbo escape, that's why they're in such a hurry to get out of there, because they know as soon as the sun comes down, the goblins are going to come after them and will chase them a long distance in order to avenge their fallen leader. So,
and you're right. And in the book, after when they've escaped, you know, when Bilbo is listening to them talking after he's escaped himself and meeting back up with them, they kind of recount what happened. And the dwarf says something to Gandalf like, yeah, you did your big bright light thing and, you know, such and such. So I'm, you know, I was, as soon as I read that, I, you know, pictured, of course, we're going to see the staff do its, you know, Bridge of Khazad-dûm thing, you know, inside the mountains with the goblins. So, yeah, I mean, that's a fairly big scene, so I would think we were going to see that. I mean, you'd have to do it as a cutaway. You couldn't really do it in serial form, you know, do the riddle game and then do the dwarves.
Mm-hmm.
And off. Anyway,
yeah,
so.
I presume that they're going to... So, in the book, they... Huh. How do they do that in the book? Do you remember?
Well, I can't remember the scene inside. I'd have to go back and check it out, which I could easily
but
do
I,
with my kill, I guess.
I think they tell the story to Bilbo. I think that's how that's portrayed.
I do know that Bilbo overhears them talking about their escape when he's invisible and, you know, going to sneak past Balin, you know, to rejoin them. What I'm trying to remember is how the situation of the Great Goblin being killed, because they don't talk about that when Bilbo's overhearing them. That might actually happen before.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Bilbo isn't separated from the party until after. Yeah,
right.
So they're captured. They're taken down to the Great Goblin. Gandalf shows up, kills him, saves them. They run, and it's while they're running and escaping that Bilbo gets
separated. Right.
Yep.
Very interesting. I mean, this guy's going to be a really interesting part of the film.
So what we don't get to see on screen is how they escape, and then what they do while Bilbo's gone. So
that's what in the book they tell it after the fact. Yeah,
right.
That's what Bilbo's over here.
Presumably, that seems like the kind of thing that Peter Jackson will probably want to show on screen.
Turn into an action scene. Yeah, absolutely. That's what I was thinking. I mean, when I read it in the book recounting, I could picture that as a scene in the movie.
Right.
Harry J, I have to read his because it was so funny. He says, going with B also, we need to be a little honest here. Gollum is going to kill and eat Bilbo either way. We know it. The audience knows it. It won't take 9 riddles to get us there. It's like the overused scene where a guy has X bullets in his gun, and the shot that finally kills the bad guy is always the last one. If you give that guy 9 bullets, by the end, the tension is gone, and you've bored the audience to tears with filler. I think a couple by either, interspliced with flashbacks and tension-building silences and grumbles will be plenty.
That is an interesting point. The riddle game maybe is going to seem really slow on screen to a film audience that has already been introduced to the character of Gollum and is already sort of filling in this background of, like, you know, well, I know, we already know he's murderous. We already know that he would kill Bilbo if he had the chance. And so, like, let's get to it. We don't need to hear a bunch of riddles and goofiness. That's a very good point. It's a very, very good point.
Right. Now, Andrea came up with a thought that I recall my having, you know, madly typed into the Netmoot box too during this episode, which is that the passing of time could happen as a voiceover from Bilbo telling the story to Frodo in the story and scene. That gives a bit more in the mind of it gives us a bit more into the mind of Bilbo, how Bilbo was feeling and thinking. Another way it could be done was in voiceovers of thoughts from the characters. I don't know. As Andrea says, she doesn't like either one of those ideas, and I agree. And I for sure don't think that the one about seeing into the minds of both characters. I could see, you know, if we were looking to get time to pass, the voiceover thing from Bilbo, but actually this cutaway idea, I think, is probably more logical for them to do.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
Because otherwise,
agree.
I mean, you get just the voiceover and there's no action. Brent Sprinkle said, he brought up the thing about the 13 minutes again. He has to say, as much as he doesn't want to, that less is more. The whole montage idea is completely corny, and which is what was that? Was D, wasn't it? And yes. Would ruin the suspense of the scene. So it leaves me no choice but to think that we will get only like 3 or 4 riddles. And this is when I was reading Brent's thing, that's when it dawned on me, wait a minute, you know, 9 riddles, that's only 4 rounds, you know, back and forth.
Right.
Which ones? He says, which ones? Well, I think they would decide that on which ones will show what kind of character Bilbo and Gollum are the most. In other words, what are most, you know, character defining. Mm-hmm. He says, I think that PJ and company tried to the best of their ability to pay homage to Tolkien's original words and thoughts, and I think that this is such an iconic scene that they would want to keep Tolkien's original wording of the riddles. And this actually came up quite a bit, folks, and I think Mark said it too. You know, this is an iconic scene. I mean, hopefully they won't do a lot to change this particular scene. I mean, hopefully they're going to sail as close to, you know, Tolkien as possible on this. I don't see a reason for changing it, you know, other than maybe taking some of the riddles out. I mean, to change it drastically from what's in the book, to me, would just be egotistical.
Yeah,
to me,
well,
in my opinion.
It's never stopped him before.
I know, that's the and I'm going to get into that in the next episode, because, you know, this whole issue of can we trust Jackson, I think, should probably be a conundrum.
Well, it's not a matter of can we trust him, but it's a matter of you know, at the end of the day, the highest priority here is make a good film. And,
right.
And the judgment that he is, you know, like, I'm going to say that I don't trust him to do things exactly the way they are in the book. But on the other hand, I'm going to defend him and say that it doesn't make him a bad person or an egomaniac. His highest priority is to try and make a good film, and that he really, you know, the judgment he has to trust on what will make a good film is his and that of his teammates and coworkers and fellow writers and directors and producers and all that. And so, you know, he has to make those decisions about what he thinks is going to result in what will make a good film. And if that means he has to alter things or change things or rewrite riddles, then he'll do that. And maybe some of us will say, well, that's terrible. You've played fast and loose with this beloved book and destroyed it and all that. You horrible, horrible person. But, you know, I mean, I generally don't believe he's doing things arbitrarily.
I don't think so either. I mean, I'm going to get to this into more detail in the episode.
Right.
My big question is, where do you draw the line?
Right.
And I think it could be very, very easy for PJ and company to overstep and not realize they're doing it. In other words, not to overstep, you know, because they're power mad, but because they've already made so many changes that it just, this one more won't hurt, or this, you know, it's just, that's what worries me. But I'll get into that a little bit more in the next episode.
Yeah, I think it would be naive to deny that there isn't probably some ego going. I mean, if you're a big name producer or director like Peter Jackson is, you know, those kinds of people, like artists all have like a tiny bit of narcissism in them, because you sort of have this attitude of, I'm going to make something and I think everybody else wants to see it. You know, you have to be at least a little bit of a narcissist that way.
Let me clarify. I don't think Jackson would change it. I mean, I don't think he is egotistical in that sense.
Right. Well,
you know,
I don't
think he's like a, what's his name? The guy that did the Mars, Orson Welles.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think he is that way. And that's why I say, I mean, I can't see him changing this scene. I can see him changing other scenes, and we know he has changed other scenes to fit the story that they're now putting together. But I just don't see that with this. I mean, I think this is.
Right. Well, I can see him. Basic. I can see him changing it when it's obvious to him that it doesn't work on screen the way it is in the thing.
Right.
You know, I mean, like I think the one thing we can for sure trust him to do is to not slavishly take what's in the book, put it on screen,
just serve it's
it.
In the book.
Yeah, serve it up to us and say, boy, that's right. Boy. It really looks and sounds awful and doesn't work at all. But that's
right.
Way in the book.
That's
and
way in the book. Oh my
God! I don't think he's
equally critical of him if he did that.
I don't think he's. I don't think he's just changing it just because he can or wants to. Like, we're not going to see him.
I don't care.
We're not going to see him start, like, we're not going to see him publish a new, novelized version of the film that he thinks is an improved version of the book. But I think we will see him, I think there's going to be sort of two kinds of changes that he's going to make here. Change one will be just the kind of the practical, what works on screen, and if that means we have to alter story, dialogue, characters, then we'll do it. And then the second thing is attempting to kind of continue the trajectory Tolkien himself was on of incorporating the more childish elements of The Hobbit into the more mature and filled and epic world of The Lord of the Rings. So I think he'll do that. And I don't think either of those things make him a bad person. That doesn't mean he'll succeed. It could be, I'm sure there'll be things he'll do that I'm going to hate, but I attribute to him the best of intentions. And I believe he's really making his best effort. So,
well, I'm going to agree with you in this episode. I mean, I may contradict myself in the next episode because when it comes to the Tombs of the Nazgul, I'm a little hot under the collar on this one, but
we'll wait and talk
about that then. And then there's some other things too. You know, some of the things that we brought up in episode that we talked about in episode 13. And again, that's the next digest we're going to be doing. I just want to respond to some of that stuff because I do think there's some stuff he could be doing that wouldn't cost a lot of extra money. Doesn't have to, you know, they're not super major parts of the plot that he could certainly be doing that he doesn't appear to be doing. So, but I do agree with you. Here's the bottom line for me in terms of Jackson. I don't think there's anybody else who could make these movies. I mean, I think that about The Lord of the Rings, and I think that about The Hobbit. So all of my conjecture and criticism, if I make it, or concern, is all within that context of I don't think there is anybody else who could make these movies and do them justice. So I do want to be clear and go on record in saying that. So everything else I say should be, you know, be just remember that that's my stand as I'm criticizing somebody who I think is the only person who could really do these on film. So
I don't know if he's the only person that could do them, but I think he's a very fine person to do them.
Yeah, well, you're right. I mean, I'm not that involved in the rest of them. I mean, I remember for years whenever there would be a, you know, rumor of a live action film, I would just cringe at the idea because I just couldn't imagine, you know, anybody doing it. So I was really actually pleasantly surprised with Lord of the Rings.
And I'm not letting him off the hook. Changes.
No, exactly.
I hate the other films. You know, not that bad. I don't hate them, but there are parts of them that I detest.
Yeah.
I detest the Faramir portrayal. I think that was an arbitrary and completely didn't work at all and seemed to be no reason for it that I could imagine. And there's other parts of it that
wimping Aragorn out like he did.
Yeah, I didn't like the way he kind of de-epicized Aragorn and made him conflicted and kind of more sort of normal. I didn't like the Aragorn falling over the cliff scene. Like,
no, me neither.
And that's why in general I suspect I'm probably going to agree with you about the Nazgul stuff. Like the parts of the other films that I generally liked the least were the parts where they were innovating the most.
Now save it for the next digest.
Yeah. I
didn't say my. Did I say my?
Yeah, you need to officially declare your prediction.
So I am, I'm conforming just boringly here and saying B. I mean, I do think B is the most logical answer to me. That I, and that's kind of what I was leading up to. And I just said that thing about I don't see him changing. I think he will keep some of the riddles and some of the ones that are more anachronistic or longer, or whatever. He won't have on screen, or he won't have at all. But I think that he'll stick pretty. I think he'll stick pretty close to the book on this one.
Yes. Yep. 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 I completely agree. I completely agree. As you well know. So, and you're in good company. The only people who disagree with you are Corey, which would seem to be under other circumstances under other circumstances would give me doubt, but since we've heard from Andy Serkis, I think Corey's just wrong. And then Hannah, and then Lily and Elorio, I don't know what the heck they were doing.
Now, we have a conundrum, don't we?
Yeah, let's add our conundrum. Our conundrum, will the riddle game be one interrupted scene? My answer, no.
As is mine. I don't believe that it will be one uninterrupted scene. And I think Mark Fisher said it the best, as well as Kate. You know, they
I think drew a good picture of how we think the film will.
Yep, that's the best way to remove riddles and at the same time communicate time passing, in my opinion.
And keep it going, keep the energy going, because yes. I think one long 13-minute thing is going
to
be...
Yeah, that would kill it. If we were going back to if we're switching back and forth between kind of the more high energy action elements of the dwarves running, fighting goblins and trying to escape, and then sort of a building tension in the riddle game.
Right. And it gets really quiet when they come back to the cave, right? And it's,
yep. I think that could actually work extremely well. I don't think they'll cut back and forth.
No.
I think they'll cut away maybe once or twice.
Twice at the most.
Yeah.
Now, see, this is another one of my examples of what I said earlier about Jackson and Circus and everybody being cagey. You know, so Circus said, we did the thing in 13 minutes. So if you take that at face value, you could walk away with an assumption, oh, the Riddles in the Dark is going to be 13 minutes long, you know, the scene. He never said it was going to be 13 continuous minutes on screen. So that's one of the things, you know, I think when we're listening to Jackson, I mean, these guys are smart cookies in the way that they're communicating us. I mean, I like it. I mean, I'm looking forward to actually there being surprises. I mean, how horrible would it be for me to go see this movie and basically know everything from all the production videos and interviews? So.
I hope there'll be surprises.
Yeah,
I hope they're not surprises in the sense of me getting my predictions wrong, because I want all of those to be right, because I want to win. But
I was going to say, I hope they're not surprises, the kind of surprises that are going to get me thrown out of a theater.
Oh, yeah. Well, that too. But at this point, I suspect by the time this film rolls around, I suspect I'm going to care more about being right than I am about this detail or that detail. Like I what will probably cause me to be more upset.
You're going to print out the grid and you're taking it with you, right?
Yes. What will make me more upset than anything will be being wrong, being like, oh crap. So that's it. Okay.
You may have to fly to LA and come see this with you, Dave.
I'm sure it's going to be a heck of a time. So, I do want to, before we wrap up this episode, I do just want to one more time just say, just to clarify, I don't hate the other films. since I said that jokingly earlier, I said, I hate those films. I don't actually hate them. It's impossible for me to watch them and just enjoy them without fixating on the things that they changed that I didn't like. As my fiance will attest to you, and it's kind of, I'm not saying they're bad, but unfortunately there's a lot of the changes they made were to things where I'm very much, you know, the thing that they changed or eliminated was something I really, really enjoyed.
Nuance in the story.
Yes. And so, you know, it's not that it's a bad film. It just so happens that they just made choices that I don't like. That don't appeal to me, and therefore I have trouble just keeping my mouth shut and sitting back and enjoying the films as opposed to watching it and thinking how I would have done it differently. But I don't think they're bad films, nor do I hate them. And I admire Peter Jackson, and I think he really does care about the story, and does his best to bring a faithful vision to screen. So I just want to toss that out there.
That's
I'm not a hater.
That's a cliffhanger, because we're going to be talking actually more on this topic.
Yeah, so next episode when we start talking about the Nazgul stuff, I'll be like, oh God, Peter Jackson.
And the Comic-Con stuff, yeah.
All right.
Stay tuned, listeners.
That's right. So I want to thank all of our I want to thank everybody that's participated, our analysts. That includes Mark Fisher of the Encyclopedia of Arda. You can find him on the web, of course. That includes Arwen Kester of Middle Earth News. You can find her at middleearthnews.com and also Middle Earth News Twitter account. Father Roderick of SQPN, my partner on the Secrets of the Hobbit podcast. Our Twitter is at Hobbit Podcast, and he also has a Facebook page, and you also can go to thehobbit.sqpn.com. Merrick and Goldenstar of A Casual Stroll to Mordor, the largest Lord of the Rings online site and podcast on the web. You can find them at casualstrolltomordor.com. Hannah Harlow of Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, Lily and Eloriel of the Warriors of the Westfold podcast, which is over at Middle Earth Network Radio and airs on Friday nights. And then The Last Alliance, the University of Alberta Tolkien Society. So thank you to all of them. Thank you, of course, to Corey Olson, our fearless leader. And
all of our commenters on the Mythgard site.
Yes, thank you most of all to our listeners and our commenters. So we're getting better and better feedback from you guys. And more interesting comments. So keep it coming, because that's what makes this fun and makes it keeps the conversation going. So finally, thank you to you, Trish, for joining me. So I look forward to seeing you at the next episode in about 3 minutes.
About 3 minutes.
Yep. All right. Why don't you take us away?
All right. Thanks for listening, and Godspeed.